This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 17th of June, 2022, and a big nothing burger overnight from the Bank of Japan, insisting on maintaining their yield curve control policy and offering daily operations to defend that yield cap on the 10-year Japanese government bonds at 0.25%. This was a surprise in the local sense because there was increasing speculation, even direct attacks via selling of JGB futures on the Bank of Japan's policy, but they stood pat. And we'll cover more of that, of course, but that's a specific story. The non-specific story and what people are mostly trading, especially Saxo clients, is equities. And we had another very ugly day yesterday, Peter. We were down 3.25% on the S&P 500. And as we've been pointing out lately, it's remarkable the nature of this drawdown and this sell-off. We're not seeing new highs even. Yes, the VIX picked up. We're not even seeing new highs in volatility. Just remarkable markets, just absolutely nothing like the prior to the pandemic and even maybe parts of the post-pandemic breakout phase, this market here. So what are you seeing as you look at the market landscape?
Yeah, it's interesting you're saying it because I am watching this the VIX forward curve on a daily basis, and you're absolutely right. We haven't had that snap where we go into this liquidity chaos and, you know, risk off massively. We have seen it, I would say, over the past 10 years. We've had these quite violent sell-offs, and then that has then caused a very sharp rebound. And we've seen that so many times, but not this time around. We're down 23% more or less in the total return index on the S&P 500. It's been rather orderly. But then again, I looked at the drawdown profile, put it on my Twitter profile yesterday. It gathered some attention because if you look at the different, some of the worst drawdowns in US history, and we are, I think, 115 trading sessions into this drawdown, it's actually the second most violent of the worst drawdowns that actually got to this point. It's only the Great Depression drawdown that is worse than this current one. So on that measure, it is a little bit tough out there. And to say the least with the NASDAQ, I mean, we're down almost a third now in that index. It is painful. And you can see that on slide 2 as well. It was all the intangibles, which is part of what we're going to write about in our outlook. The intangibles are selling off, and a lot of the tangible, if you will, defense, logistics, renewable energy is also a tangible commodities on a relative basis doing better. So there's still a red thread going through the market here on that account. But having said that, John, I was sort of putting out there in our internal discussion, I don't think we have any agreement in the team on that, but I wouldn't be surprised because, and you said it yesterday as well, I actually like the idea that, you know, the recession fear could actually put a stop to the interest rate momentum, and then in itself could cause a small relief rally in equities, just for the mere fact that the interest rate has stopped going up.
That's a good segue to the next slide, because you have the equity treasury correlation, which is sometimes positive of late. So if you look at the slide 3 there, it's sort of an intraday chart stretching back into late March, where you see that we had a big drawdown both in interest rates, or this is the treasury future, that's the blue line there, the black line being the NASDAQ future, where it was multiples, concerns on multiples, concerns that valuations are stretched when you have yields moving so aggressively higher. And then you can see at times it stretches back the other way, goes negative for a while, and then it got positive again until yesterday, where we saw new lows in the market, but a big rally in treasuries. And to your point there, some of that rally was on weak U.S. data, everything from another high jobless claims print relative to the range of the last few months. We had the Philadelphia Fed heading negative, and all the people that like to overlay leading this versus lagging that, showing that this has often in the past led to extreme outcomes in terms of recession risks. There was also some housing start data and building permit data that was showed a big air gap or air pocket in the market there. So yeah, are we gonna start celebrating weak data because yields begin to drop at the long end of the yield curve? As we've seen so many times in the past, especially the post-gold financial crisis, time frame, or do we see equities going lower because we're actually fretting what an actual recession means for earnings? So I find that an interesting question to ask here. And you see on the right there on that slide 3, that is the U.S. 10-year treasury. And we descended back to the highest of the cycle, 3.2%. You know, we could dip below that slightly, but that's quite a line in the sand. And, you know, to my sometimes Elliott wave minded look at charts here. That is a very well-defined 1-3-5 wave count there. So just curious if we're going to get this long end rallying strongly here. I think that'll have interesting implications across markets.
Yeah, you talked about the potential for these rate hikes hurting growth, and I think that's most certainly the reason why we've seen gold actually trade higher this week after the low point just ahead of the FOMC announcement on Wednesday, trading up quite a bit. We're still in the range, but if there is I think this week has brought about an increased worry about stagflation, i.e. we get lower growth and we get central banks not being able to arrest the inflation in time before perhaps having to look the other way. So that's what's underpinning gold this week, together with obviously the turmoil we've seen across the stock market and in the crypto space as well.
Yeah, and that takes me to what happened overnight. As mentioned at the top of the program, Bank of Japan continuing to swim against the stream. You see on slide 4, Dalian, there was some pretty intense speculation this week that they might at least move towards some kind of incremental shift on their yield cap policy, some other move, maybe even walking away from it. I thought there was some chance of this. I should have realized, maybe to a degree in 2020 hindsight, this is sort of existential for Mr. Kuroda himself, this policy. Perhaps hoping to wait out, we just mentioned weaker U.S. data, maybe treasuries are coming back in. Certainly, it helped the yen from avoiding an even worse sell-off again overnight that we saw a big, strong rally in treasuries. Regardless, they didn't move. They even mentioned FX, though, they did mention FX, though, in their statement in a very sort of neutral way, but it does suggest that there may be some pain level on FX that would make them have to revisit their policy. But we see dollar yen rushing back towards the highs this morning. It was almost at 134.5 before we came to the studio, and higher than when I snapped the chart here on slide 4. And I'm really curious as well, looking in the crosses, what China's going to do about this. This 20 level on the renminbi versus the Japanese yen, very interesting. Are they going to step up the pressure somehow? Are they going to do an independent devaluation of their currency to make sure that this level is not breached? That seems to be what maybe happened in mid-April when they made a quite isolated weakening move in their currency versus the dollar after allowing it to sort of track stronger versus the dollar, what was already a strong dollar. And then, I mean, there was so much going on yesterday. Bank of England out, they did do the smaller rate hike, but they sort of toughened up on their guidance, saying they were willing to go forcefully, sort of indicating maybe larger rate hikes going forward if the inflation risks increased. And they even raised that CPI forecast to above 11% is where they're predicting now that the CPI will peak sometime around October. And that kept UK rates pinned higher. Euro sterling reversed quite strongly back to the downside. And cable had a spectacular intraday move, which is partially unwinding. But at the same time, earlier in the day yesterday, and as we were doing the podcast and recording it yesterday, we had the S&P out with its large 50 basis point rate hike. There was sort of an increasing ramp in expectations that they might move, but they did move and they moved big, and it had a big impact. Euro Swiss was down over two figures. Dollar Swiss was really spectacular. Look at slide 5, that Dollar Swiss chart. Really just a technically devastating move there. It gives one thoughts that this could be a double top. And I wonder if some of that dollar move yesterday was simply prompted by titanic Dollar Swiss selling after Dollar Swiss had been trading at parity and even above, suddenly back below 97. So let's see if this move sticks in dollar Swiss, but the dollar move itself is kind of unwinding and around the edges, especially against the weaker currencies, the Aussies, the CADs, et cetera. So I'm not sure that this dollar move is over just yet, but we have to be open-minded here. If Fed expectations have peaked for the cycle, that could be interesting for a dollar weakness. However, if we're worried about a new global recession and liquidity crunch, et cetera, that is going to be providing some offsetting safe haven support. But look at the trend readings there on slide 5 on the FX board. Dollar resurgent a little bit this morning, even though the negative momentum reading of the last couple of days, and the Swiss franc really at the top of its game here after that big move. We don't know if the S&P is going to follow up with a series of hikes, but it certainly sets their credibility in a very different light from the ECB and its struggles there. All right, enough on the central bank talk. I think it's very interesting to see how it closed the week, both on the dollar and the yen and rates. I think those are the key moving parts here for those markets. What about in the commodities? Ola, we have crude oil just, it was down quite a bit yesterday, I guess a bit on this recession concerns, etc. But it did not stay down for long.
No, it didn't. And I think we just need to look at this week's performance table, which obviously is highlighting the divergence we're seeing in gas prices in the US and Europe. But below the European gas price surge, we got the diesel in New York, and we got the gas oil in Europe, which is obviously the feedstock for diesel and petrol, gasoline production in Europe. And the tightness is just not, it just doesn't want to go away. Yes, right now we are, some investors are, traders are getting a bit concerned about these growth forecasts, and it may have a negative impact on demand, but generally, that's really what we need anyway, just in order to keep prices where they are, because otherwise there is still a risk we could move even higher before we find a level which is high enough to proper kill demand, so we can get this market more balanced. And we saw the IEA early in the week just basically highlighting the risk for an increased deficit next year. So that's an underpinned market. What's not been underpinned has been the so-called China-centric commodities we've seen. Coal, iron ore, and copper, aluminium, all hitting the brakes this week, and it is the combination of, as I mentioned, the growth concerns in a market where the tightness is not as elevated as we see in energy, and then there's some news that China's zero tolerance COVID policies may actually be in place all the way into next year, and that's not what the market was looking for. They were looking for a strong rebound in demand over the coming months or into the second half. So maybe we're not going to see that, and that will keep some of these metals under pressure for the foreseeable future. And staying with the metals, because that's really where I think it is interesting, because we just take a look at copper here on slide 7. We've shown that quite a few times. Nothing really has happened for the past almost 1 year and a half. We are getting close to key support, but also just take a look on the right-hand chart. Inventory levels of all the main major metals still coming down. So we're not seeing a pickup in inventory levels, which is obviously, I can't tie these two that well together, besides saying that the weakness at this point in the industrial metals could be a buying opportunity. And what are you saying, Peter?
I'm waving my hands. Yeah. What are the reasons behind that massive, decline in warehouse stocks?
Well, it obviously this one is only showing part of the picture, because it's only warehouse stocks monitored by exchanges in London and the Shanghai Futures Exchange. But obviously, these are the two biggest. These are the two by far the biggest, and this is really where volumes are being shifted in and out. And normally, you would find that if there will be arbitrage between the two centers. So sometimes you see declining in LME and moving to Shanghai, and vice versa. We're not seeing it. So based on this, I can only assume that we basically don't have the build-up in stocks that you would expect it right now, where China has been slowing for a while, and we've had this negative price action. And I think one of the reasons that this is getting a little bit long, but this is just for reference. This is from my current presentation slide. I borrowed some of the information from Bank of America, but just take a look at this. These are the metals for required for the push towards net zero or the green transformation, and we're always talking about batteries, the cobalt and lithium. But just also remember that one thing is a battery. Also got the engine that needs to drive in the electric vehicles, and then you got solar, wind turbines, hydrogen economy. You got nuclear power. The red ones I highlight here are the metals that are called critical raw metals. Basically, they are small in size in terms of demand, but they're critical in terms of being able to produce these types of innovations, batteries, and so on. These are basically have an outsized importance. So I think that is the reason why we will continue to see strong demand for metals over the coming years. And you can see it's not just copper and a few of the well-known, there's a lot of them.
And one of the biggest private rare earth miners in the world, Lynas, from Australia.
Which is all these ending on
niobium and neodymium and praseodymium.
It's a very dirty business to refine those metals. It's not because they are rare, but it's just maybe they're rare because it's so polluting and most countries don't want it. China has a commanding a very high market share. And Linus has a refinery in Indonesia, I think, where they have had troubles at getting extensions and what have you. Anyway, they just signed a big contract with the U.S. government the other day to expand their capacity. The U.S. really wants to massively ramp up, and we have MP Materials. So we have two big private players, and not to pat ourselves on the back too much, we did actually 5 years ago say Linus would be one of the best geopolitical players of all time. And back then it traded at $2 Australian dollars a share. Now I think it trades 8.5. So
that's a good point when you say the geopolitical, because that is the only reason the U.S. is looking to put this in the U.S. to make sure that they have supplies for high tech and probably no doubt military applications. Diversification of supply chains is a key and long-term theme here.
And even nuclear power, uranium was also on the agenda last week, where they were looking for a package to basically incentivize production of uranium in the U.S.
Okay, let's switch gears. We had the big company Adobe, who we've talked about all week, reporting yesterday after the close. What's your take on the report? How do you think this equity is shaping up today?
Yeah, so Adobe was down 5% in extended trading. They put out a slightly weaker than expected fiscal year revenue guidance. It's not much, but enough to set off a chain reaction of 5% anyway. There is a little bit of demand destruction. I think they admitted that on the conference call as well. They do software application for content creation, which is linked to marketing activity. And we know marketing activity is being slashed or reduced at this point in time. I've highlighted two other stocks on stocks to watch today on slide 9. Moderna, which you can see on the share price chart I've put into the right. So if you look at the Moderna, it's trading at the lows for the cycle, basically. And I think we mentioned it last week, and you said, John, I'm not prepared for that. Me neither. But there are talks in Europe that we potentially will move into some temporary lockdowns here and there. And
No.
Yeah, and we have the FT running a front page article today. Hospitalization are rising in four European countries: Portugal, Germany, and can't remember the two others. But if you look at Moderna, the share price, which I think is the most purest expression of expectations for COVID vaccines and demand for it, it's not there. So either the market has totally forgotten about COVID, or maybe it is nothing. We have natural immunity enough to not have too many vaccines. I don't know. But look at Moderna as a potential trade idea. It's not a recommendation, but look at it. I think the divergence between the headlines coming in and where that stock price is trading, it's trading at 10% free cash flow yield forward basis right now. And that's without, you know, any change in expectation. Asus, a rather large UK-based e-commerce fashion retailer, those shares tumbled 32%. It's down, I think, 90-95% from the peak now. Massive significant cut to the pre-tax profits. Revenue slammed. I think revenue growth was halved, I think, versus the previous guidance. And I think the main question today is, are bargain hunters coming in to scoop up some shares? Because, I mean, that's a massive move. And we know that there are always mean reversion effects kicking in when you have such a big move.
Cool. All right, let's have a look at, you got an earnings calendar for next week.
Very light.
You surprised me there, but it may be interesting to hear one of these home builders. Lennar is a big one in the U.S. I mean, these housing numbers are coming off, and they're coming off fast in the U.S.
Yeah, so mortgage applications are, you know, in the 5% percentile over the past three decades, so since 1990. So we're definitely seeing weak mortgage applications. We have had mortgage rates in the U.S. go from 3% to almost 6%. The price of the median home, in principal, payments on your monthly mortgages have probably gone up by 75%, more or less. Lennar, I should say, is a home builder. Look at that share price; has really been clubbed here, and I think it's one of the interesting ones to listen into. And you had the Swedish Realtor Association chairman saying yesterday that the sentiment shift in Stockholm and Swedish real estate market over the past 6 weeks mimics a lot of what he saw past the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers. So a pretty hefty stuff. And then Lennar's on Tuesday, and then on Thursday, FedEx and Accenture. So FedEx rose the other day. There's a lot of activity around FedEx, and regarding changing their operations and improving profitability. FedEx, of course, on logistics, and then Accenture can give color on recruitment. You have mentioned that, John. It seemed like there was a pickup in layoffs, and we also had weak initial jobless claims yesterday. So Accenture in the recruitment space, It's not in recruitment. It's in management consulting. But that's actually on the fringes of recruitment, I think, because if the labor market is weak, you're not going to hire a consultant. So let's look for that one.
I think I like that Darden Restaurants earnings report as well as a timely one, because it's one of these it's a restaurant chain that owns restaurants where maybe those not casual dining, but or maybe it is casual called casual dining, but it's not fast food. So people with a bit more income, are they seeing anything that's causing them concern in terms of consumer behavior? That's the kind of spending that's so easy to not do, to not go out to eat at a restaurant, spend $150 on a meal for your family. So an interesting one there as well. All right, macro calendar. There's very little on the calendar for today. We have Fed Chair Powell out, but it's probably some canned remarks, and there's no Q&A, so I wouldn't worry too much about that. Interesting to listen in on Bank of England's economist Pill out later. They're expecting a recession for this quarter, but not next quarter. But what is he seeing? What is he saying? We have the Polish CPI out today, and the Eurozone May final CPI, by the way, out this morning, is expected to be marked considerably higher to above 8%. Next week, fairly busy in some respects, as we have Fed Chair Powell out with semi-annual testimony. Is there any kind of political pressure heating up on the Fed? Interesting to watch how what the performance is there, to what degree this is becoming a political hot button issue, the rate rises, what maybe constituents across the U.S. are telling their Congress representative. Flash PMI is from the Eurozone as well. The Japanese May national CPI, it'd be interesting if that one's a shocker. Is there any kind of fresh pressure on the Bank of Japan? And various other bits and pieces, as you can see. The Norwegian Central Bank, and one of the reasons the Norwegian krone has been one of the weakest currencies of late, is their very, very slow pace of rate tightening relative to what's going on elsewhere. It's going to be an interesting week ahead. I'm curious how we also close today, given where equities have traded to, and given that sort of tipping point we pointed out on the longer-term U.S. Treasury yield charts there. So watch for that. Stay careful out there. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.